Listen to what religious people do. And so the Jews, the religious people, said to the man who had been healed, "It's the Sabbath. The law forbids that you carry your mat."
This is Straight Talk.
Hello, I'm Joshua Halleck, your host at Straight Talk Radio. On behalf of Pastor Mark and the whole Straight Talk team, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We get comments all the time about how people are being blessed through the work here, and it just delights us to know that we're a small part of your spiritual journey. We'd love to hear about it. Have you been blessed by the program? Do you have a story to tell of how God's used a message from the Bible through this program to bless your life? Or maybe you have a question, or there's something that's really bothering you that you'd love to hear Pastor Mark talk about or to have answered. Write to us at info@straighttalkchicago.org. You can send us an email at info@straighttalkchicago.org. Let us know. It means a lot to us. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Straight Talk. Glad to have you with us again. We continue on today with Pastor Mark's series called Love Stops, and today is the second half of his message called Love Stops for Freedom. Let's jump right into the message. Here's Pastor Mark with this edition of Straight Talk.
Some of us say, "I really want to get out of this place that I'm at," but really you're saying, "I want my mattress to be a little thicker." I would say, hey, as long as my mattress is a little more comfortable, I'm willing to stay in my prison cell. I want my pillow fluffed, but I don't really want to get out of prison. I'm not really ready for a total life change. I've gotten used to where I'm at. I've gotten used to being stuck. I'm not sure I want to go forward. I just don't want to be uncomfortable right now. Jesus looked at this man and he said, "Do you really want to get well?" Let me tell you this. Every change starts with a decision. Unless you make a decision, you'll never change. It doesn't end with a decision, but it starts with a decision. You cannot change until and unless you decide, "I am ready to change. I want to get well. I want to get unstuck. I want to change." Jesus looks at this man and he says, "Do you really want to get well?" It seems obvious. It seems like it's a rhetorical question. It seems like it's answered itself. But let me tell you, here in America alone, there are 10 million alcoholics over the age of 18. Most of them, if you were asked them, "Do you want to change?" they would say, "I don't want to be an alcoholic," but do they really want to? There's over 200,000 heroin addicts in the United States of America. If you were to ask them, do you want to change? Do you want to be set free?" Many of them would say, "Yes, I want to." But they haven't yet answered the question if they really, really want to. You see, there are 70 million people or more in this country that are 30 pounds overweight or more. You say, "Oh, now Pastor, you're getting personal." And you know in your life that you want to change, that it's not what you want to be, that your doctor says, "Hey, you're going to die of a heart attack. This is bad for your cholesterol." Listen, do you want to change? But the question is, but do you really want to go through the pain of that change? There are 10 million pill abusers in this country. And most of them, if you were to ask, "Do you want to change?" they say yes, but in reality, I'm not so sure. There are 35 million nicotine addicts in this country. They know every time they light up that there's a warning on the cigarette pack that says, "This causes cancer. This may kill you." And deep inside, if you were to say, "Do you want to change?" most of them would say yes. But the question is, do you really want to change? I mean, seriously, do you really want to change? Because it starts with a decision. God can do nothing until we decide. God leads us to a decision. He prompts us to a decision. He convicts us to it. But there comes a point in time where we have to choose. We have to make a choice. And the power of our process begins in the power of a decision. Secondly, if you're taking notes, write this down. The second step is not only you have to choose, but the second step is you have to stop making excuses for why you're still bound by your problem. I want you to notice how this man answered. Jesus asked him a very clear yes or no question, but he answered basically with excuses. Verse 7, he looks at Jesus and says, "Sir," the invalid man replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water's stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Well, hello, is that what Jesus asked you? Did Jesus really say, "Why do you think you're in this condition you're at?" No, that's not what he asked. Jesus said, "Do you want to be well?" And he takes time to explain why he's in the condition he's at and why he can't change. See, most of us camp out in why we're not changing. I call it a victim mentality. You see, listen to me. When you're a victim, you have no responsibility to change. When you're a victim, you cross your arms and you wait for the world to change. You wait for your husband to change. You wait for your boss to change. You wait for your kids to change. When you're a victim, you simply cross your arms and say, "I would not be this way if the people around me were different. But I have to be this way. As long as the people around me don't change, then I have to be this way." You see, this man who was stuck for 38 years, he started with the people around him and he said, "I have no one to take me into the pool." He could have said, "Well, it's my family's fault." You see, if 30 of my relatives would just take one day a month and hang out with me and wait for the pool, I mean, they don't even have to talk to me. They could just sit there and read the paper, do aerobic exercise, whatever. Just hang out with me. And if the pool stirred, they could pick me up and put me in. My family doesn't support me. It's all my family's fault that I'm in this condition that I'm at. If I just had people around me that supported me more, loved me more, encouraged me more, listen, I wouldn't be stuck. It's all these people, boy, if I just had the support I needed. Sound familiar? Hello? If you're a victim, you know that language because you've used it. If people would just support me, if someone would call me up, if someone would just encourage me. It's all the people around me that aren't supportive, encouraging. They're not positive, so that's why I'm stuck where I'm at. And then he goes on, he starts blaming the other people. "Listen, every time I try to go in, I've seen the pool move a few times. And I make my way over, but look at me, I'm paralyzed, I can't move too fast, and the lame guy he's only got one leg that's bad. Man, he jumps over me, and he gets in the pool quicker than I do." You know, there should be a numbering system to this process. I mean, where does seniority fit in? I've been here 38 years, that guy's only been here 3 years. Man, I think he should get in line. It's the people around me that keep me stuck the way I'm at. That's a victim's mentality. And that's exactly what this man had. He had a victim's mentality because victims look at people around them and say, "I am this way because of the people around me, and I cannot change unless they change." Some of you are in a marriage and you blame your bad attitude on your husband. Or you blame your negative attitude on your wife. And you say, "Well, if my husband would change, then my attitude would be different." Let me tell you something. Listen, your attitude is not your husband's problem. Your attitude is your problem. You are responsible for your attitude. "If my boss weren't so negative and critical, if my work environment would be different, then I would be a different person." No, you are responsible. Listen, step up to the plate. Say, "I am responsible for me. I am responsible for my attitude. I am responsible for my destiny. I am responsible for my life. I am not a victim. I am responsible for me. No one else can tell me how my attitude functions. I choose my attitude." Are you tracking with me? You know, when we're stuck, we use a lot of, we can deny, we can generalize, we can minimize, we can dodge, we can blame, we can attack, we can excuse. We can do a lot of things when we're a victim, but ultimately, we are responsible for our own destiny. Ultimately, we are responsible. And listen to me well, look up at me, because this is real important. If you're waiting for someone else to change before you get unstuck, good luck, because you're going to be in your prison cell for a long time. Amen. It starts with a choice. The second step is that you stop making excuses for where you're at. You take responsibility and say, I'm here the sum of my choices have led me to where I'm at. And I take responsibility for where I'm at right now. My attitude, where I'm at in my spiritual life, where I'm at in my family life, where I'm at in my relationships, where I'm at in my stuckness, I take responsibility. Number three, listen, you need to discover the freedom process that God has laid out for you. You say freedom is a process. I want you to notice what Jesus said to this man that was stuck after he gave him excuses. Verse 8, Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Now that may seem like it all sort of connects together in one sentence, but there's three emphatic commands that are given here. One is get up, secondly is pick up your mat, and third is walk. Listen, this man was being asked by Jesus to do something that in his own power he could never do, that he had attempted year after year, season after season. Do you not think that he had tried to get up and walk hundreds of times? Do you not think that he had raised himself thinking in his mind, well, maybe this time my legs won't give in? Do you not think that he had tried to lean himself up against one of the pillars around that pool and tried to hoist himself up? I can guarantee you he had tried on his own power many times. The difference now was the infusion of the dunamis power of God, of the Holy Spirit. Because you've tried a lot of things on your own power, but unless you've tried with the power of God, then listen, you have not tried yet, because the power of God is the difference maker. And Jesus said to him, get up. The second thing that Jesus said to him was, take your mat. I was always a little puzzled about why Jesus would say, take your mat. I never thought Jesus was super environmentally friendly. Was this about littering, recycling? No. As I thought about this, I think there's something much deeper going on in this, why Jesus said, take up your mat. If you've ever been around the homeless, you'll realize that for the homeless, a cardboard box becomes their home.
We'll be right back with Pastor Mark Jobe in a moment. You are listening to a Straight Talk message entitled Love Stops for Freedom. It's from our series called Love Stops, and if you'll stay tuned, we'll tell you how you can get a free copy of this message, as well as information regarding Pastor Mark's ministry at New Life Community Church in Chicago. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Mark. We're in the book of John, chapter 5, with our message called Love Stops for Freedom.
They view their cardboard box like you view your house that you pay a mortgage on, because that's their place, that's their space, that's their identity, that's where they feel like, hey, this grounds me, this is where I belong. I believe that Jesus was telling this man, I want you to pick up your mat, because that is who you were, but you will never go back there again. You're not leaving the mat in case it doesn't work out. You go back there. This is not a commitment with prenuptial agreement. This is a commitment to say, once I pick up my mat, I lose my space. I will never go back there again. This change will be for good. This change will last. This is not giving up your girlfriends and keeping the little black booklet with their phone numbers. This is shredding their phone numbers. This is not giving up that cocaine addiction and saying, well, I'm going to keep my connections number. No. This is calling them up and says, it's over. It's done. I'm never going back. Erase my number from your cell phone. Don't ever call me again, because it's over for me. There is no going back to it. This is not breaking up with the mistress and not calling her and telling her. This is calling her and saying, it's over. It's done. I'm a new man. This is a new life. I'll never go back. I'm erasing your number. Take it off my speed dial. It's over for us. I'll never go back to that mat again. This is no return policy here. I'm done with this for good. That's the kind of commitment that Jesus is asking for. you know, some of you go on a diet and you say, but I'm going to keep that silk pie in the, you know, in the back of the refrigerator just in case it gets tough. You know, I'm going to keep it back there just in case. No, this is trashing all the silk pies. This is getting rid of all of it because I'm not going back again. Pick up your mat, get up and walk. You know why we walk? I don't think this man, when he took his first step, could walk very good. But you see, walking is the first step in a journey. And many of you worry about making it. You say, well, what if I fail? But you see, you can never start until you start walking. It's one step at a time, one victory at a time. Today I had victory. Today I give it over to God. Today I let God deal with it. Today I handle it. Today I give it over to God. You know, it's one step at a time that you begin to gain victory in the long-term journey that God has you on. One step at a time is the victory. So get up, do what's impossible to do on your own. Take up your mat because you're never going back, and start walking away from the place where you have been stuck forever, and keep walking more and more, one step at a time in that process to victory. You see, here's what I want you to understand. You see, I believe that, and I've taught you this before, but I want to reiterate again. The power of a decision has to be followed by the process of obedience to ensure the progress of our journey. Some of you make a decision, but you don't commit to a process. Let me tell you, if you make a decision, but you don't commit to a process, you'll be right back making that decision again. Listen to me, men. You come to this altar. Oh, I like you to come to this altar, but don't come to this altar and get on your face and say, oh, God, change my wife. Oh, Lord, change her again. Oh, God, work in my marriage. Oh, Lord, help me right now. And get up and do nothing about it. If you come to this altar and make a decision that your marriage is going to be different, then you better take the next step, which is a process. You better go get some marital counseling. You better join a Fusion Hope group. You better do something about the decision that you've made. Because if you do nothing about the decision that you made, you haven't made a decision. You've made a wish. Hey, let me say that again. If you do nothing about the decision, that's not a decision, that's a wish. You want a magic wand to change your life, and God is asking for steps of obedience. You say, oh, God, I'm stuck with this habit. Then join a rehab center. Start visiting an AANA group. Take a step. Oh, I want my marriage better. Then dial a counselor today and start taking steps. Oh, I want to grow in my life. Then get a mentor today. Start taking steps. Don't just come and say, I want to change. You need to follow with obedience. You need to take the next step, because that's the kind of decision that will cause you to have progress in your life. It's obedience follows our decision. Just like these people took the step of believer's baptism. It was a decision followed by a process. If you don't take that decision, listen, it's a revolving door. You'll be coming back over and over, making the same decision and wondering why you're not changing, unless you have a process to ensure the progress. Jesus said, take up your mat, get up, take up your mat, and walk. And let me close with this. Lastly, guard your heart so that you won't slip back into bondage. I love this about this story. Oh, God is good. Listen. Verse 9, at once this man was cured. He picked up his mat and he walked. The day on which this took place was the Sabbath. Listen to what religious people do. And so the Jews, the religious people, said to the man who had been healed, it's the Sabbath. The law forbids that you carry your mat. I mean, are you serious? Serious? This guy has been healed after 38 years of being a paralytic, and all you notice is that he's carrying his mat on the Sabbath? I mean, are you serious? And that's what religion will do to you. That's what hypocrisy does to you. That's what self-righteous does to you. Listen, if you become more religious but less like Jesus, then forget about it. I don't want you to become more religious. I don't want you to become more steeped in religion. I want you to become more like Jesus. I want you to have the heart of Jesus, the love of Jesus, the life of Jesus, the attitude of Jesus, not some religious attitude. Because religious attitude puts people in boxes, and I believe that our God can't be contained in boxes. I believe that he does what he's going to do because he's sovereign and will not be contained in a box. And I love this about this passage. Listen, verse 11, but he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up the mat and walk.'" I'm just obeying. I don't know about the Sabbath. I don't know about the law. I just know that the man told me to pick up my mat and walk. So they ask him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick up the mat?" Listen to this. The man who was healed had no idea who it was. For Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was out there. Do you believe this? He was healed by Jesus, and this man didn't even know who Jesus was. He's like, "Well, it was that dude that was here, and he, I don't know, he just came. Get up, pick up your mat." I mean, I swear he was here, really. I don't know his name. And here's what I love about this. Listen, he's still God, whether you know him or not. Listen, he's still sovereign whether you believe in him or not. God is still God over your atheist boss who doesn't really believe in God at all. It doesn't make Jesus any less Lord. His power is still manifest. He's still Lord of the universe, whether people acknowledge, whether you know his name or not. It doesn't take away from his lordship. He can still do miracles whether you do know his name or not. He still runs the universe whether you acknowledge him or not, because your acknowledgement doesn't make him God or not. He's God whether you like it or don't like it. He's God whether you know his name or don't know his name. He's still God. Listen, he still works in your life whether you like him or not. Some of you are married to women that come here and love Jesus and like God and are trying to follow him. But you're not real happy she dragged you here today on Palm Sunday. In fact, we have skid marks out in the parking lot from heels that have been dragged like this. And some of you are here because your wife said, and you said, "Okay, I'll go with you, but you're treating Giordano's afterwards on your paycheck." And you're kind of sitting in the crowd saying, "You know, I hope that ball guy hurries up and finishes up this sermon quickly, because, hey, I know what's going through your mind. Don't act like I don't. I know we're not all sympathizers here. I know we're not all Jesus lovers here. But listen, I want you to hear me well. Even though you're here, and maybe you're here with an attitude, and maybe you say, you know, the service is too long. You know, I'm not a believer. I don't. Listen, it doesn't change the fact that he's God. And here's what I want you to know, even though you may not know his name, when you experience his power, you're touched by his love, and he begins to influence your life. You may not know how to describe it or how to explain it, but you will know that there is a God that exists, not because someone told you, but because you have seen it, experienced it, felt it, and lived it, because he's God. And then lastly, listen, verse 14, later Jesus found him at the temple and he said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus that had made him well. Listen, there's one thing to get free. There's another thing to maintain your freedom. And Jesus said to this man, "Listen, you've been set free. I want you to stay free." Some of you, God has deeply, powerfully touched you and set you free, but it's time to stay free. The walk in the freedom that He's called you to, so that you don't end up worse than how you started.
You have been listening to Pastor Mark Job in the second half of his message called Love Stops for Freedom. This concludes our series called Love Stops. Have you downloaded our free Straight Talk app yet? There you can download a free copy of this message as well. You'll find it at PastorMarkJobe.com. That's PastorMarkJobe, J-O-B-E.com. We have some great messages on family, relationships, and how to grow in your spiritual walk with God. If you'd prefer to have a CD, you can also contact our office at 773-585-3300. That's 773-585-3300. CDs are only $5 plus shipping. Why don't you join us at New Life Midway, where you can hear Pastor Mark in person at either 9:30 a.m. or 11:30 a.m. at 5101 South Keeler near Midway Airport. If you're on the train, it's the Orange Line with the Pulaski stop. Well, that's it for us on the Straight Talk team. Thank you so much for joining us again. On behalf of Pastor Mark and all of us, have a great evening, and God bless.